is an amazing learning and growth opportunities this semester. Before we have the opportunity to hear from our Leibowitz Shlita, the chapter is going to share a few words. As everybody, I think, hopefully knows, we sent out a few emails today. Our Barron campus community, and really the broader YU and Kalyasar community, suffered a major loss today by Moshe Kahn, who Dean Schefter will tell you more about in a moment, a longtime Judaic Studies faculty member here, beloved faculty member here, passed away this morning. So Dean Schefter is just going to speak about him for a few moments before we hear from everybody else.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. First, I really just wanted to welcome you all back. Welcome those students who are joining us for the first time for their first semester here. Welcome. Again, I'm just going to ask you to, if you are a first time on campus, if you could just raise your hand. Come on, don't be shy. Everybody look around the room. Try to see where those girls are sitting. And welcome them, a big student college welcome. And make sure you go over and find at least one new student. Introduce yourself, say hi. Welcome them to our beautiful community. A community that at 8 o'clock at night, you look at this Beit Midrash, it's packed. After a whole day of classes, I know just people just came out of stats right now, a few minutes ago, and just packed to learn Torah together. And it's so special, and such a schus for me to be part of this, and such a schus for us to have our teachers and Rebbeim and the Rosh Yeshiva, like Rabbi Leibowitz, coming to spend time with us and to learn Torah with us at night after a full day that, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz had on the Uptown campus. So we really, really appreciate it. I don't want to take up a lot of time from Rabbi Leibowitz, but I really just wanted to share just the thought. Some of you were here when I spoke before club hour, but I just wanted to say that, like Rabbi Fine said, we've experienced a tremendous loss today. Rav Moshe Kahn was really a cornerstone, just a foundational Rebbe here. He's been teaching in Stern College since 1983. And if you, anybody here, had any teachers in seminary or in high school or in elementary school or in college and in college who went to Stern College, they probably were a Talmidah of Rabbi Kahn, including myself. And he was a musmach of YU, and a lot of the musmachim of YU, they go and their goal is to teach men. They want to shear in YU. You know, that's the goal. They want to be able to teach, and a lot of them go and they want to have a shear of men. And Rabbi Kahn, his mission was to connect women to Torah. And that was his agenda, period. Just to connect women to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Torah. And he taught so many of us Derech HaLimud, how to learn. And he didn't, there was no other agenda. It wasn't like there was any other agenda other than connection to Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he did it in a very humble, very, very unassuming way. He was really a tremendous, humble giant, powerhouse. In Torah and Limud HaTorah, and he taught Torah Shabbat Peh, he taught Gemara, he taught Halacha, and I really, you know, if you have a teacher that you're close with, ask them who, and they went to Stern, ask them who they learned Halacha with, and I will bet anything that they learned Halacha and or Gemara with or Moshe Kahn. So it's really a tremendous loss that we lost this tremendous person too early, and I feel it was such a schus that I had an opportunity to meet with him and to learn with him, and anybody who I've taught, and if you've learned her Torah from me, and if, you know, students are like children, then you are Rabbi Kahn's grandchildren, because then I'm a child of Rabbi, and any of your teachers are children of Rabbi Kahn's, and then you're the grandchildren. So you really, even if you never had the schus of meeting him or learning with him, you really have enjoyed Torah from him as well. And he was so proud. He was so proud of his Talmidot from CERN. So I did send an email out today. The Levaya is going to be tomorrow at 10:30. We do have 10:30 in Hackensack, New Jersey. There is a van leaving from Stern. If you want to come, you could be in touch with Gabby, one of Rebbe Kahn's Talmidot, and you could be in touch with her. And again, you know, if you didn't know him, if your moms went to Stern, you can ask them. They probably learned with him. And just so you know that we've really lost someone tremendous in our midst. So it was a very exciting day, the first day of the semester, but it was also tinged with tremendous sadness because of our loss. So I just wanted to share that with you, and maybe we could dedicate, you know, whatever learning we're doing tonight how does that even work? It's before the Levaya, but in memory of Rav Moshe Kahn, who's really tremendous giants of Torah here. And it is my honor and pleasure to introduce Rabbi Aaron Leibowitz, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva University. And one of the things that's very special to us is that the students on the Barron campus have the opportunity to learn with the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University, that they come and they spend time here and they not only give a share, but they hang around. And, you know, our students get to spend time with them. Come introduce yourself to Rabbi Leibowitz when he's finished. And I really want everyone here to feel a part of this tremendous community and tremendous, you know, Yeshiva University across the board. And I want to also publicly thank Rabbi Ozzie Fine for putting together all these tremendous learning opportunities, the Barron Torah packets. If you haven't had a chance, take a look at it, take a look at it. If you're not on the WhatsApp group, make sure you're in the WhatsApp group. And I've been trying to lower the heat. thank you, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Okay. Thank you so much.
That's like
I'm chilling. Right, okay. All right, thank you very much. Thank you so much, Dean Schechter. It's really an honor to be here. And I feel that, you know, this conflict of energies, you know, there's such positive energy in the room, and it's the beginning of the new semester, and there's such a, Baruch Hashem, such a beautiful crowd coming together to learn Torah, and at the same time, it's such a sad day for Stern College, losing Rabbi Kahn, Zichrono Levracha, and, you know, in a certain sense, not just in a certain sense, in every sense, the crowd that's here to learn Torah is really the very greatest tribute to his decades of accomplishment in promoting Torah learning on this campus. So there's no greater way to, you deserve a better Magid Shir than me, but there's no greater way to honor that legacy and everything he worked toward than to come together to learn Torah, even after a hard day and even after a long day of classes. So I thank you all for doing that, and Be'ezras Hashem, our learning should be a zuchus for his neshama. So I was talking to Rabbi Fine, and when he asked me to come and speak, I said, okay, any suggested topics, what I should talk about? Because, you know, sometimes when I come here, we talk halacha, sometimes hashkafa, different things. So Rabbi Fine suggested, I'm just going to name it. I'm going to say it straight out. I'm a direct person. I'm not going to dance around it. Rabbi Fine said that you should talk about the unifying power of Torah. The unifying power, right? Is that your phrase? He has such a good way of phrasing things. I never would have thought of that. I would have said, like, Torah togetherness or something, right? The unifying power of Torah. And what does he mean by that? Why does he want me to talk about the unifying power of Torah? And I think what he means by this, and the reason he thinks it's such an important topic, is that sometimes we come from different places. You know, you're coming to this campus from any number of seminaries, high schools, communities with different value systems, not such different value systems, by the way, but, you know, slightly, we tend to make a big deal out of very slight nuances of difference. And sometimes the Torah itself can serve as something that divides people, or that creates certain cliques and certain assumptions about other people. And that is a tragedy. Because the Torah is meant to be a tremendous unifier of Klal Yisrael. So if someone says, well, no, that's not my style, I don't learn Gemara, or I don't learn that fluffy stuff, I only learn Gemara, or this or that, whatever labels there are, the Torah should never, ever be used as a source of divisiveness. So I thought that was the basis of the decision to speak about the unifying power of Torah. So, okay, so that was the that was, it's like a sign, stop, you know, lights off. It's like when you're at a simcha and they want you to move to the next room, they start flashing light. Okay, was I not allowed to say that? I don't know. No, let Torah divide you, fight with each other. Is that, because that could be better? It's an ironic thing almost to talk about the unifying power of Torah, because machlokes is really a foundational element of Torah. When Torah's going well, there's machlokes in Torah. That's the way it's meant to be. But here's the difference. Machlokes is very good when there's a machlokes in learning. A machlokes about learning is not so good. meaning a machlokas in learning, we're both learning something together. You're reading a Ramban, I read it one way, you read it a different way. We're disagreeing about how to read it properly, about how the Ramban is answering the questions that he asks, and we start arguing. And that is beautiful. That is exactly what Hashem wants. That's what the Gemara says in Maseches Kedushin, Esva Hev Besufa, the Gemara Darshan Zapasuk, that Afilu Av Ubno, Ravu Talmido. You could have a father, a son, a Rebbe, and a Talmud that are learning together, and Nasim Ka'ovim, they're like enemies, they're fighting with each other. But once they finish learning, they're Ohavim Zeh. By the end of the day, it builds a relationship, it builds a bond. So there's Machlokes that builds a bond because it's the shared struggle over a text, it's the shared struggle over trying to figure out how to learn something, and that builds a tremendous bond. That is the good kind. That is the good kind of machlokas. I think I've even mentioned the story on this campus before of Shechter Shlita, Moreno Agon of Shechter Shlita, loves to tell the story of the Mir Yeshiva. When the Mir Yeshiva was fleeing Europe during the Second World War, and they were trying to get to Shanghai, where they would have some a safer haven than being in Europe and getting murdered with 6 million Jews. So they were on a train, and the whole yeshiva was on this train, and there was a non-Jew on the train that was writing his memoirs. And can you imagine the surprise when he sees like 300 yeshiva bachrim get on a train with their big gemaras, and they, like, he had never seen this before, he had never experienced this before. It was like eye-opening to him, you know, like he was today he would start a YouTube channel and say, look how yeshiva boys live or whatever, and it would be, but he started writing his memoirs, and he said, and he writes in his memoirs, they take out these gigantic books, and they open these gigantic books, and they yell at each other, and they hate each other when they have the books open, and then they close the gigantic books, and they're best friends again. And he says, I don't understand what's going on, what in that those books makes them so angry, and when they close those books makes them so happy. But that's what he perceived. That's Torah at its best. That's Torah at its best. When we're using Torah to argue in Torah to build a greater relationship afterwards. At its worst is when we use Torah to argue about learning. Why do you learn that? Why do you not learn this? Why and look down upon other people? So what I want to talk about is really three things. I want to talk about Torah serving as, or rather unity serving as, a prerequisite to Torah, and many different ways that we find that unity, that achdus, that a sense of love for one another is a prerequisite. The word prerequisite is a word you hear a lot in college, right? You can't take that course, it's prerequisite. So the prerequisite to learning Torah is a sense of achdus, is a sense of unity. Second, I want to talk about how exactly Torah unifies, who it unifies, who it brings together, and how it brings us together. And then third, a little bit about the danger of division among Klal Yisrael, if time permits. But we'll see if we get there. So first of all, unity is a prerequisite to Torah, is beferish in the pasuk. It's really explicit in the parsha of Kabbalah Satorah itself. The Torah tells us, Ve'ichen Sham Yisrael Neger Ahar, and we're describing all of Klal Yisrael. It should have said, you don't have to know that much Hebrew grammar to know that it should have said, Vayachanu, that they encamped right by the mountain, but it didn't. It said Vayichan, and Rashi famously comments, famously, four famous words. What are the four famous words? Exactly, that we had this sense of unity, and it's clearly laying out for us that was the only way Kabbalah Satorah was going to happen. It's not just, oh, we needed a mitzvah, we needed to do something good and positive before receiving the Torah, and the mitzvah we happened to do was Jewish unity. No, there was no other mitzvah that we could have done that would prepare us for Kabbalah Satorah. It had to be that one. It had to be Jewish unity. It had to be Ki'ishachad B'Levechad in order to receive the Torah. And even more than that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, do you want the Torah? Right? And we know the famous medrash that he went to all the other nations, Maksivba, what does it say in the Torah? Well, it says you can't murder. Oh, I love murdering people. Oh, okay, so it's not for you. Why, you can't steal? I love stealing. It's not for you. And what does Klal Yisrael say again? Famous two words? Nasa. Oh, you guys are great. This is great. So Nasa v'nishma, right? We say Nasa v'nishma. Let me ask you, how can you say Nasa v'nishma? Nasa, what, translate those words for me. Now let's get a little into the weeds. Translate those words. Na'asa v'nishma. We will do and we will hear. Yeah? We. We? I don't know. I could say, I will do and I will hear. I'm all in. I'm all in. I commit. How could anybody say na'ase? Meaning, we are mekabel all sorts of things to do all the time. Right? New Year's resolutions wasn't that long ago that it was New Year. Right? So what do people do? They're going to go to the gym more often. They're going to eat right. They're going to read a book every Shabbos like David Bashevkin tells them to. They're going to do whatever. Right? They're going to do all these things. We make all sorts of commitments to do things. Right? All sorts of commitments that we're going to do things. But it's I will do. Can you imagine? I'm going to start tafiyomi. I'm not whatever. Can you imagine if someone were to say, I am hereby committing that my entire block or my entire shul or my entire neighborhood is all going to do Daf Yomi. Really? I'm going to commit that for everybody else? How could a person possibly say that? Na'aseh v'nishma. That we're saying, we will do. How can a person possibly make such a commitment? And yet that's exactly what we did. Beis Halevi points this out. It means that we not only accepted the Torah, but we accepted a certain madrega of responsibility for one another. That we're going to make the Torah so beautiful and so sweet that it's going to have an impact on everybody around us, and everybody around us is going to want to participate as well. And you know what the flip side of that is? The flip side of that is the Cheda Egel. Beis Halevi points this out as well. That the Cheda Egel was the low point for Klal Yisrael. The low point was when we adamantly declared, Eila Elohecha Yisrael. These are your gods, Israel. Why would we refer to a god as Elohecha? And Avodah Zarah is your God. Meaning, if we were really being makabel this Avodah Zarah, if we were really committing to worship the Egel, we should have said Ela Eloheinu or Elohai, referring to an Avodah Zarah. That's what you're allowed to say, right? What's Ela Elohecha that we're saying about other people? And the Beis Halevi points out something unbelievable. He says, probably each Jew in that generation said, I'm not going to bow to a golden cow. That's ridiculous. But I don't mind if everyone else does. It doesn't bother me that everybody else does. That's the flip side of Na'aseh V'nishma. Na'aseh V'nishma is I take responsibility for other people, and I care about other people's ruchnius. The glory of Har Sinai, and in turn, the epic failure of the Cheda Egel, was in our attitude toward other Jews. Na'aseh V'nishma was the ultimate expression of responsibility. Judaism does not believe in live and let live. Or Judaism does not believe in it's none of your business what somebody else is doing. Judaism believes in achrayus. We believe in kol Yisrael, arevim zeh lazeh. We believe that we are responsible for one another. We believe that we have to inspire each other and lift each other up. We've accepted mutual responsibilities, and then we allowed our brothers to commit the worst sin of the Cheda Egel. And that dichotomy, that shows what Judaism is at its best and what we are when we are at our worst. You know, there's a beautiful story about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was, of course, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vidas and was an Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od, tremendous Talmud of the Altar of Slobodka, a brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham, and he attended a Chumash play for one of his grandchildren, because that's what grandparents do, right? So he attended a Chumash play for one of his grandchildren. So imagine that you're the administration of the school where the six-year-olds are about to receive, I don't know, how old are you when you receive Chumash? Roughly six, right? I don't know. So let's say Ben Chamish Lemikra, so probably five, yeah? Okay, so whatever, a five-year-old receives the Chumash, and in walks Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Right, so what do? So you say, Rosh Yeshiva, would you like to, they call me Rosh Yeshiva. First of all, I'm not actually Rosh Yeshiva. That's not even my title. But also, I'm also not really, you know, whatever. Okay, so but in walks Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, you say, Rosh Yeshiva, would you like to speak? So he was asked to speak to a bunch of five-year-olds. So what's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky going to say to a bunch of five-year-olds? So, brilliant. He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a piece of chocolate. And he says, who wants chocolate? And this is a little risky because he was looking for a particular answer. And a bunch of kids said, I do! And one kid screamed out, as soon as he said, who wants chocolate? We all do! And he turned to that kid right away. We all do. How do you know we all do? You could say that you want chocolate. How do you know that everybody wants chocolate? How could you say that we all want chocolate? He said, because chocolate is awesome. Meaning, it's so sweet. It's so delicious. Of course we all do. So I don't know if the message was lost on 5 and 6 year olds or not, but it wasn't lost on me. That, Rabbi Yaakov said, is Nasa V'Nishma. Who wants Torah? We all do! Because it's so sweet, it's so delicious. Of course we all want it. And we could say with confidence that we all want it. You know, that's really what the Mishkan was there to fix. We were meant to come together, have a single place that we all built to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a unified people. You know, Rav Soloveitchik in the Tshuva Drasha described the difference between a Karban HaShutvin and a Karban HaTzibur. If, let's say, you wanted to bring a carbon, but an animal maybe is expensive. I don't know how much a goat costs, or a sheep, or whatever. But you want to bring a carbon, so you just decide to get everyone to chip in. Everyone's going to just put, like a quarter together, and then you'll get all the Klal Yisrael. You do one of these things where, like, we'll all finish us together. So everyone's going to read, like, one line, right? Everyone's just going to do a little bit. So you do that with a carbon. You get everyone to give, like, a nickel. I remember Rabbi Shai Shechler told me he learned in the Mir Yeshiva, and he was in the shir of Rabbi Asher Arieli. Rav Asher Arieli is the largest live shir on the planet. There are some online shirim that are bigger. Eli Stefanski's Daf Yomi, I think, is bigger. But for Rav Asher Arieli, he's the largest live shir on the planet. In the Mir Yeshiva, he has 1,200 Talmidim in his shir in the Mir Yeshiva. Something like that. I may have made up that number. But, it's something like that. And the guys in the shir wanted to get him a gift. So there were some of the senior members of the shir that were, in the shir for already 15, 20 years. That's the way it goes in the mirror. They're in the shir for like 15, 20 years. And they had gone to his house, to learn with him, to do chazara at night. And they noticed that there were clotheslines all over the hallway with his family's clothing hanging on a clothesline. Do you even know what a clothesline is? Right? I mean, they didn't have a dryer. The family didn't have a dryer. They had a washing machine. They didn't have a dryer. So the shir decided everyone will chip in one shekel, or two shekel or something, and they'll buy him a dryer. So they did. Everyone chipped in two shekel or something, and they presented Rav Asher Arieli with a dryer, and he turned it down. And he said, my wife and I, when we got married, decided what we need and what we don't need, and we decided that we're never going to raise our level of gashmias, only our level of ruchnias. This is not normal, right? So we decided that we don't... So we're so appreciative that you thought of us and that you wanted to buy... But please return it. And the hardest part was giving back two shekels to 1,200 students. They didn't even Venmo, it's the mirror, they don't have a smartphone. They had to go, they had to give it back to every student. So, says Rav Soloveitchik, a carbon seaboard is everyone chips in a couple of dollars and we're all together in it. That's a carbon of shutfin, rather. That's a carbon of partnership. That there's just happens to be a bunch of owners of that carbon. But then there's something called the carbon at seaboard. Carbon at seaboard is, it comes from communal funds, and it represents all of Klal Yisrael. It's not because you chipped in, it covers you. It just represents Klal Yisrael. It's not that there are a million partners. It's that there's one owner of that carbon. You know who that one owner is? Klal Yisrael. Not that there are 3 million owners of the carbon. And you have such a concept when it comes to the Torah also. There is this entity called Klal Yisrael. Any individual... Within Klal Yisrael, there's no guarantee that we live forever. In fact, it's pretty much guaranteed that we don't. But Klal Yisrael lives forever. Klal Yisrael never falls apart. Klal Yisrael will always be there. The Zohar famously tells us that, maybe Ramchal, not the Zohar, but Oraisav Kutchabruchu, Kutchabruchu va Oraisav Yisrael Chadhu. That Hashem, the Jewish people, and the Torah are all one. What does it mean that they're all one? One level of meaning. What it means is that all of those things are eternal. Hashem will never not be there. The Torah will never not be there. The Torah is eternal. It applies in every generation. And Klal Yisrael will never not be there. Our connection to Torah and connection to each other through Torah is how we grab onto the coattails of eternity. If we want to live forever in a certain sense, we want to be part of something that will always exist, we grab on to Torah and we grab on to each other. And through that, we grab on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Hashem, the Torah, and the Jewish people are here forever. So in a certain sense, that is how unity is a prerequisite for Torah. But in another sense as well, how many letters are there in the Torah? So there's a Zohar that tells us that the word Yisrael is actually Rashi Tevos, Yesh, Shishim, Ribo, Osios, LaTorah. That there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Anyone ever count?
Yeah.
No way.
I was in a class. You
wrote a program that counted. Okay. And how many letters are there, in fact, in the Torah?
A little more than that.
What?
It was a little more than that.
It's less than that. It's not even close. It's 304,805, I think. Right? Meaning it's fewer than that. Right? It's yeah, you got to work on your programming. But it's there are three. The Zohar tells us there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. And guess what? There are not 600,000 letters in the Torah. But the Zohar knows how to learn. Meaning, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai knew how to learn. So what does it mean? He had the same Torah that we had, because we're in the Rambam Zikarei Amuna that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai has the same Torah that we had. So what was he talking about? What does he mean, 600,000 letters in the Torah? What he means by 600,000 letters in the Torah, of course, is the number 600,000 means to us, Klal Yisrael. 600,000 means the number of Jews. That's always representative of the number of Jews. And there's something amazing about that. Because a Torah missing a single letter, what do we call that? Apostle of Sefer Torah. And a Klal Yisrael missing a single member, being attached and finding their letter in the Torah, finding their connection to the Torah, that costs all of us. That is my problem. You know, last week I was privileged to join a group of Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, and we went around to meet with different important and fascinating people. And it was a great, great trip. It was just an amazing time. If any of you are in any of Rabbi Shai Schechter's classes, I'm sure he's spoken about this trip probably a lot, because we're all on like this high from it. It was an amazing, amazing time. One of the meetings that we had was with Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. Anyone ever read his book, Out of the Depths? If you haven't, read it. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau was a former chief rabbi of Israel. His son is a chief rabbi right now, chief Ashkenazic rabbi. He's a Holocaust survivor. He was the youngest survivor of Buchenwald. My grandfather, Shalom and Be Well, was together with Rabbi Lau in Buchenwald. Rabbi Lau was like a little tiny kid. Everyone in Buchenwald knew who he was, because it didn't make sense that he survived. It didn't even make sense that he was there. He was a tiny little kid. And we were talking to him. You know, he became chief rabbi of Israel. It was amazing. He said that he is the 38th straight generation of rabbis in his family. His father was generation 37. And we asked him, like, how did you become a rabbi after surviving the Holocaust? And he said, I don't really think of anything else. There were 37 generations, he said, Kigematria Lau. 37 generations that preceded me. And he said, it was me and my brother that survived. He said, our middle brother got killed in the Holocaust. He said, me and my brother survived. And my brother was older than me. From the age of 13 to 19, he was in Auschwitz and Buchenwald. He couldn't learn. He wasn't going to be a rabbi. But I was a little kid. I still had potential. So there was no chance that I wasn't going to be a rabbi. So I became a rabbi. So he was a fascinating person, an amazing, amazing person. So we asked him, one of the things we asked him is about, like, how do you manage as chief rabbi, the chilonim and the charedim and everyone in between? And, you know, like, how do you... And he just went off on us. And he said, you think that we have problems in Israel? You think that in Israel, like Israeli society, how's it gonna work? He said, do you realize what's going on in America? He said, you know, in the 1940s, there were 6 million Jews in America. And then you know what happened? 1 million more Jews moved to America in the years in between. And Jewish families grew, and there were a lot of families that became huge and lots of children. How many Jews should there be in America just based on simple population growth? 20 million? Conservatively? He said, you know how many Jews there are in America? Less than 6 million. You're hemorrhaging. there's a 70% intermarriage rate. You think we have problems in Israel? He said, how come nobody's paying attention? Klal Yisrael. And it was just so eye-opening that it's like, we have to worry about Klal Yisrael. We have to worry about every single member of Klal Yisrael who's not connecting to the Torah. That matters to us. It's nogeya to us. Shishim ribo osios la Torah. And it's not only true of the letters of the Torah, if you zoom out a bit, it's true of the books of the Torah also. The Chidush HaArim writes, Chamisha Chumshei Torah is unique in that in order for them to have their full Kedusha, they all need to be together. Meaning any other book, a book of Navi, has Kedusha as a book of Navi, and it has the same level of Kedusha if you have a whole book of Nevi'im. But Chamisha Chumshei Torah, there's a Chumash that has one level of Kedusha, put them all together, the five scrolls together into one big scroll, and now you have a Sefer Torah, an entirely different level of Kedusha. There's something about when it comes together. The Gra explains a famous pasuk. Maybe you've heard this pasuk, you let me know. It goes something like this. Eshes chayil mi yinsa. Okay, you've heard of it. Good. Rabos banos asul chayil yata lisal kulana. The entire song is not really a love song from a man to a woman. I hate to break it to you. It's a description of the love that we have for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His Torah. That's what Shlomo HaMelech is waxing poetic about. In order to achieve Torah, the Mishnah tells us we need 48 different midos, the Memches Kinyanei Torah. So the Pasuk says the Gra, Eishes Chayil Mi Yimtza. The Gematria of Chayil, 48. How are you going to be able to find somebody who can perfectly acquire Torah and has all of the necessary attributes? Rabos banos asu chayil. It's only when we all get together, when it's rabos banos that are asu chayil, that we can collectively achieve all 48 attributes. Meaning each of us are flawed. Let's be honest. When we take an honest look in the mirror, we know we have strengths and we have weaknesses. But you know what's great about Klal Yisrael is that when we do look out for each other, we tend to compensate for each other. You know, couples often do this, right? They're often one member of the couple is like extremely organized and diligent or whatever, and one is fun loving and a free spirit. Like they there would be certain things missing in the household if each one wasn't there. And we complement each other. Our strengths complement each other. Says the Gra. Rabos, banos, asu chayil. The only way to do chayil, to get all 48 kinyanei Torah that the Mishnah Pirkei Avos talks about, to have all of the midos, all the attributes necessary for Torah, is when it's rabos, banos. When it's a lot of us together, then collectively we have it. We need each other. On a very practical level also, we know that there's no such thing as a Jew who truly fulfills Taryag mitzvahs. There can't be. There are some mitzvahs that are only for Kohanim, some mitzvahs are only for a Melech, some mitzvahs are only for Levim, some mitzvahs are only for a man, some mitzvahs are only for a woman. You can't be all of those, I mean, today maybe, but you can't be all of those things. You can't be everything all at one time. You can't be. We can't do all Taryag mitzvahs. So how do we do it? We learn about them. That's one way. And the other way is we connect to Klal Yisrael. Because if I'm connected to someone who's doing those mitzvahs, and I'm encouraging them in those mitzvahs, and I'm helping them in those mitzvahs. You know, that's how some of the Mefarshim explain. There's a Gemara, famous Gemara, Maseches Shabbos, where a ger comes to Shammai, and he says, I want you to be megayer me, I want you to convert me, you know, when I'm standing al regel achas. So, Dachov ba'amas habinyin, he said, get out of here. So then who did he go to? Hillel. I want you to be Megara, and you want to stand here on Regalach. So what did Hillel say? Madalach sni l'chav v'chalosavid, v'idach pirush yizil gemar. He gave him two bits of advice. Advice number one, whatever you don't like, don't do to your friend. And advice number two, idach pirusha, everything else is commentary, go learn. So one of the commentaries in the Inyakov says, he was telling him two ways to connect to Kol HaTorah Kula. You'll never be able to do Taryag mitzvos. You're not a man and a woman and a Kohen and a Levi and a Yisrael and a Melech. You're not all those things. You'll never be able to do Kol HaTorah Kula. There are two ways to connect to Kol HaTorah Kula. connect to other people, connect to all the men and women and Kohanim and Levim and kings and everybody else in Klal Yisrael, connect to all other people, and Zil Gemar, go learn. Because we can't bring Karbanos nowadays, but you know how we're Mekayim, the mitzvah d'oraisa of Karbanos? By learning about Karbanos. We do it every morning. We say the Parsha of the Karbanos. Parsha of the Karban Tamid, the Parsha of the Ketores. If you don't, you should. Right? Women also, not just men, women also should say the Karbanos, say the Parshios that are relevant to Klal Yisrael. So that's how Torah is a prerequisite. Rather, Achdus is a prerequisite to Torah. But then there's how Torah unifies us. Now let's get practical. First way that Torah unifies us is that the Torah has the capacity to unify generations. My grandfather, shall live and be well, grew up in Czechoslovakia, and then Auschwitz, and then Buchenwald. I grew up in Lawrence. What do we have in common? How could he even relate to me? You know, I remember when we installed in our house like a full wall-sized closet for all the toys when my kids were young. And you opened up these four doors and it was like full of toys. And my grandfather saw it and he said, "Oh, just like in the Alter Heim." He was joking. There was nothing like that in the Alter Heim. There were like potato peels in the Alter Heim, you know? Like, just like, what do we have to connect over? How could it be that this is the man that I admire more than anybody else on this earth? And that, how could that be? Where's the point of connection? And the point of connection is very, very clearly the Torah HaKadosha. Because the Torah HaKadosha spans generations. It breaks apart any barriers. The Gemara says, when one learns Torah with a grandparent, it's ki'ilu kibla mehar Sinai. It's as if you're receiving the Torah directly from Har Sinai. Simple pshat is it means that the grandchild was mekabel Torah me'Har Sinai, because you get to skip a link in the Masorah. Normally, you only get to learn from the generation above you. If you get to learn from two generations above you, kilu kibla me'Har Sinai, you're that much closer to Har Sinai. But it might also mean that from the child's perspective, my grandfather got it at Har Sinai. He's the one. He was there. I feel so much more connected to Har Sinai. It's a connector of generations. Torah is also a connector of sociological divisions. Last week on this unbelievable trip that we were on, we had an opportunity last Monday to go to a place called Super Meat. The cow gets up and he rips off his jacket and there's a big S. And he's like, no, Super Meat is a company that makes, well, they make chicken actually, out of stem cells. They take a fertilized egg that's one day old, right after it's laid, the first day after the egg is laid by the chicken, they open up by a turkey, they're doing that too. They open it up, they pull out some of the stem cells from the yolk of the egg, they put it in a magical solution, and they grow it into chicken. Right, that's my scientific explanation. They grow, and it becomes the same DNA. Not like, you know, the Impossible Burger or like a soy dog that you saw in Israel once. No, like real, actual chicken, like DNA, the same actual, it grows the same way that egg was going to grow into a chicken. They just take away, they manipulate it in such a way that it's not going to grow feet and feathers and a beak, nor have a ruach chaim. It's only going to grow a pulki, you know, like it grows into chicken. And this is like a halachic, you know, an amazing halachic topic. Is it kosher? Is it fleishigs? It came from an egg. An egg is parav. Oh my gosh, you can have chicken. That's parav. You can have wow. So we went with great poskim who were going to assess. And the three poskim that we went with were Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon from the Gush, Moreno Agon Rav Shachter Shlita, our Rosh Yeshiva, and Agon Rav Asher Weiss Shlita. And I'm looking at, I snapped a picture of it, which then made its rounds, but I'm looking at Rav Rimon and Rav Asher Weiss, like, huddled over this cracked egg, you know, trying to find the spot where the stem cells are, and Rav Rimon with the giant kippah sruga, Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, learned in the Gush, right? And Rav Asher Weiss, Talmud of the Kreuzenberger Rebbe. And they're connecting over Torah HaKadosh. Whatever background they come from, doesn't matter. There's the Torah that binds them. Rav Shechter sat there quietly the entire time as everyone else was talking, and we said, Rebbe, you agreed with everything? He said, no, I actually didn't agree with anything. But okay, so we have to sort that out afterwards. But the amazing binding nature of Torah. You know, there used to be a great Talmud Chacham you've probably heard of, Rabbi Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yinkom Damo, who was killed at a very young age in a terrorist attack, along with his wife. And he, they're publishing his works now, his writings now. I think he was like 30 when he died or something like that. And it's crazy what the man was able to produce. It's unbelievable. Like, you see the loss. And he was also, you know, Datilumi, you know, a child of Rabbanit Henkin, who I'm sure many of you have heard of. And he came from a certain world in Israel. One of his best friends in this entire world that he connected with is another great Talmud Chacham, Yibadu ben Chayil Nechayim, Rav Daniel Asher Kleinman. Who's Rav Daniel Asher Kleinman? He's a Talmud of the Philadelphia Yeshiva, probably the closest Talmud of Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. He wrote all of Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky's farm. American as American can be. I don't even know if he speaks, I mean, he writes in Hebrew, but I don't even know if he speaks modern Hebrew. Definitely does not wear a kippah sruga. And they were like best of friends. Because there were these two Iluyim, these two geniuses, that were so far advanced in their Torah learning, and they found each other. And they connected with each other. They worked on Torah works together. Because that's what Torah does. Torah binds us. It breaks generational divides. It breaks sociological divides. That's Torah. And there's another way it holds us together, and that's just on the probably the most foundational level. Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes in many places, including in Ruach Chaim Perek Vav, that's his commentary on Pirkei Avos, Ki im rega echad hoya hefsik divrei Torah mikola olam, me oskeha v'shomreha. If there was, God forbid, a single moment where nobody was learning Torah, hayu shamayim v'aretz ne'afachim l'sohu v'avohu, the whole world would go back to sohu v'avohu. That the very laws of nature are only here so long as people are learning Torah. And that's why Rav Chaim Volozhiner insisted in the Volozhiner Yeshiva that there's never a moment that the Torah wasn't being learned. There were shifts. Right after Yom Kippur, some boys went to go break their fast, and others stayed in the Beis Medrash. Because there's never going to be a moment without learning. Because he wanted that the Volozhiner Yeshiva on its own should be able to hold up the whole world. Can you imagine a greater unifying factor than that? That the whole world is relying on our learning in order to continue to exist? Not just that I respect you and you can do what you want and whatever and it's fine and it's good. Your very next breath, the reason God is giving you oxygen is because there's somebody learning right now. There's no greater unifying force than that. So time is late, so we're not going to get into the danger of division. Plus, we're going to be positive. We want to be positive anyway. But I think the message is very clear. We spoke about how unity is a prerequisite to Torah, and we demonstrated that in five ways. The pasuk of Vayichan in the singular, how we all declared Na'aseh v'nishma, not Eseh v'eshma. That there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, even though there aren't. That we rely on each other for mitzvos that we cannot do on our own. And one that I skipped is that humility is what breeds the necessary unity, which we didn't get into. And then second, we showed three practical ways that Torah serves to unify. It unifies generations, a common language for grandparents and grandchildren who grew up with different realities. It unifies across social divides. You could be in any Torah community. You could have a friend that you haven't seen in years. I have this all the time. Friends that I haven't spoken to in years. And we immediately reconnect if we're both in learning. If we're both connected to Torah. I got an email a couple of years ago from someone. is this the same Aryeh Leibowitz from the second grade in Torah Semes? From, I said, yes, it is. My parents, we moved out of Brooklyn to Lawrence when I was in second grade. And the last time I spoke to my friend Yisrael was in second grade. And he is a giant Talmud Chacham living in Ramat Beit Shemesh. He's a makubal, but like in a good kind of way. And he's just like this huge Talmud Chacham, and he happened to have come across YU Torah. Like that. We're back to second grade. When I go to Israel, we went to his apartment, we got to schmooze. We didn't want to stop schmoozing. A lot of time to catch up on. Torah breaks down years of being apart. It unifies across social divides. And that our own learning might be holding up the entire world. So let's make sure that we use Torah for what it was meant to be used for. As a unifier of people, as a unifier of Klal Yisrael. And we should feel that the diversity within our community is a bracha. If everybody were exactly the same, there wouldn't be such a thing called unity, there would only be uniformity. But because we're different, and because we come from slightly different places, that's what makes our religion, that's what makes our people so special. We should always be zocha to appreciate that in each other. And I wish you all tremendous hatzlacha in this new semester, and in every semester, and all of your life going forward.
I want to thank Rabbi Leibowitz.